continuing our study of the Derech HaLimud of Reb Chaim. And there's a Reb Chaim in Hilchus Tshumos, and another one in Hilchus Tumas Ochlin, in which Reb Chaim uses the same structure. Let's take a look at the Reb Chaim first in Hilchus Tshumos. That's a little bit easier. Perek Aleph Halacha Yud Aleph. And the Rambam is basing himself on a sugya in Masechta Bechoros. This is a very, in a sense, typical Zeroyim piece of Torah, in which we're going to touch on most of the fundamentals of Zeroyim, Truma Gedola, which has to be, of course, given to the Kohen. Maaser has to be given to the Levi. Then from the Maaser, the Levi takes off Truma and gives it to the Kohen. And the issue, which is very common in Zeroyim, is the status of the ownership of a goy. So the Rambam says, Peirus HaNochri. Shegodlu b'karka shekonav Eretz Yisrael. Obviously, we're talking about Eretz Yisrael. There's no truma, there's no maser, there's no trumas maser in Chutz Laretz. But in Eretz Yisrael, we have another condition that the karka is owned by a Jew. Here is the case where the karka is owned by a goy, by a nochri. And the question is, when the Jew buys the fruits or the grains from the nochri, what is the status of those grains with regard to Truma and to Maaser, to Truma's Maaser? So the Rambam writes, and there are many different permutations, many different scenarios, but in the scenario where he purchased, the Jew purchased the Gedule Karka after Tlisha, so the Ktsira was done Biyad Goy. However, it was before Gemar Malacha. So the Gemara Malacha, which clinches the Isur Tevel and the Chiyuv Hafrasha, was done Biyad Yisrael. So in effect, we could raise a number of questions here. We could first of all raise the question whether or not the fact that these fruits grew in a karka of a nochri, that itself is mafkia, the kedusha of Trumas and Maestras. Number two, even if I grant you that once the Yisrael does the Gemara Malacha, that could engender a kedushas trumas of maisers, because he, the Israel, did the gemar malacha, which clinches the chiyuv trumas maisers. But I could still raise the following question: Is it a brand new chiyuv, or is the chiyuv a result of the fact that the ownership of the guy never removes the chiyuv? We'll explain as we go along. So the Rambam says in the following, in that scenario, we have different halachas. The halacha bifurcates. He's chayv in hafrasha with regard to all chiyuve hafrasha, whether it's truma gedola, whether it's trumas maser, whether it's maser rishon. However, as far as the nesina is concerned, here it divides up into different halachas. In the case of Truma Gedola, it's the full Chiyuv Truma Gedola. Not only Afrasha, but also Nesina L'Kohen. So once again, since the Israel did the Gemar Malacha, after he purchased the fruits, he now has to give the Kohen his due, his Truma. However, there's a different halacha with regard to Trumas Maaser. Normally, we equate Truma Gedola with Trumas Maaser. There's no difference between the two. They both require Afrasha as a result of the Isur Tevel, and they both have to be delivered to the Kohen. But here's where Trumas Maaser has its own unique halacha. And that is that since the Yisrael is coming now, Mikoach, the Goy was the one who grew and harvested the fruits. Now these fruits are separated by the Yisrael who purchased them and did the Gmar Malacha and gave them to the Levi, now the Trumas Maser has a Chiv Hafrasha, but without a Chiv Nesina to the Kohen. Which means Mochro the Kohen. Now, of course, the Levi's in trouble here, because what's he going to do with Truma? He can't eat the Truma. He doesn't want to give it as a gift to the Kohen, because in the case of Trumas Maser that grew in the Karka of a Goy, there is no Chiyuv of Nesina LeKohen, which we'll soon see why. But what he does is he sells it to the Kohen. The Kohen is going to probably pay a pittance, by the way, because the law of supply and demand says that there's very little demand for Truma on the open market. 99% of the Truma on the market is given gratis to the Kohen. But here's Truma that can be sold on the open market. The Kohen is going to pay him a fraction of its value, but nevertheless, the Levi gains that money. What about Maaser Rishon? Maaser Rishon Ushalo. In other words, the Levi receives Maaser Rishon and it's his. I'm sorry. Let's go back.
Was there a chiv?
I meant to say the Israel. I said the Levi. Yeah. So the Israel has a chiv to be Mafrish Maaser Rishon, but when the Levi comes to collect the Maaser Rishon, the Israel has a right to say to him, no, Maaser Rishon is mine. And Maaser Rishon has no Kedusha. So the Yisrael will just take the Maaser Rishon and he'll eat it with the rest of his fruits and his vegetables.
How can you sell it Maaser Rishon?
Because Maaser Rishon has no Kedusha. If the Yisrael eats Maaser Rishon without giving it to a Levi, he's stealing from the Levi, but he doesn't violate Machal Sasuris. Mm-hmm. Right? Because Maaser Rishon is Chulin. In this case, he has a Chiv Hafrasha, paradoxically, but no Chiv Nesina. So when the Levi comes, the Levi can't demand that he give him the Maaser, and therefore the Yisrael can eat the Maaser, because it's Chulin. And the Rambam gives us two explanations as to why the Levi has no rights to this Maaser. Explanation number one, says the Rambam, if Neshu Omer LeLevi, the Yisrael has a right to say to the Levi, as far as Maaser is concerned, and the Levi has a right to say to the Kohen, as far as Trumas and Maaser is concerned, when the Kohen wants to receive the Trumas Maaser gratis, Ani Basi Mikoch Ish, I'm coming from the Koch, because I bought this from the possession of someone, She'ein Atem Yechol Li Tol Mimenu Klum. If you would want to sue the guy who grew these fruits in a court of law, you have no claim to stand on, because you cannot force the guy to cough up neither Truma, neither Trumas Maaser, nor Maaser Rishon. The guy is not chayv in any of the above. So it means that the Gidul HaPri Biyad Goy establishes monetary laws such that even if the Israel buys the trumos, buys the peros, and engenders a chiyuv hafrasha, but it's still, as far as the din mamon is concerned, the Israel has a right to say, well, this is really coming from the possession of a guy, and a guy has no chiyuv neither to give to the Kohen nor to give to the Levi. Now, if that be the case, then how do we justify that Truma Gadol has to be given to the Kohen? When the Kohen comes to collect Truma Gadol, why can't the Yisrael say, Basi Mikoach Ish She'en Olav She'enat Yochel Lahotzi Mimenu Klum? What's the difference here between Trumas Maaser, where the Levi has a right to tell the Kohen to fly a kite, and if the Kohen insists on getting this Truma, he can only do so by purchasing and paying for it. But in the case of Truma Gedola, the Kohen has the right to say, I want the Truma Gedola. So and Israel's chayv in Truma Gedola.
Does the Truma Maaser have Kedusha?
Sure, it has the identical Kedusha as Truma.
That can't be enough given.
So the Rambam answers, Lefisha Nemar b'Truma Maaser, because in the parish of Truma Maaser, the Torah adds a special mute. It says, Ki tikhu, when you purchase, as far as Trumas Maaser, may ace b'nei Yisrael as a Maaser. You purchased it from Bnei Yisrael. In other words, the original owner of the field who grew the fruits was Yisrael. And therefore the following drasha applies, says the Rambam. Tevel shatalokech mi Yisrael, if it became tevel in the hands of Yisrael, then ata mafresh mimenu trumas maisu v'nosu l'kohen. Then you have the full mitzvah of truma of trumas maiser. Aval tevel shatayolokech min hanochri einata nosim l'kohen at trumas maiser. If the tevel came in the hands of the nochri, then the levi is not chayav to give and deliver the trumas maiser to the Kohen. Again, he can sell it to the Kohen, but the Kohen can't demand that he receive it gratis. Where does the Rambam get this from? Dinu b'meset b'choros daf yud aleph the isa shomar Rav Shmuel bar Nosson halokeh tvolim b'murachim min anochri ma'asram v'hein shalom. And what's the case of b'murachim min anochri? Why would he have to be chayv in maaser at all, even in afrashas maaser, since the meruach was done by the nachri? Meruach nachri is always a poter of maaser. The Gemara answers the merinchu Yisrael, that it was purchased by the Yisrael from the guy, and the Yisrael then did meruach. Meruach is the same as Gemara Malach, what we call winnowing. Vehein shalo, why does Yisrael have a right to retain ownership on a Meister Rishon, and not, he doesn't have to deliver it to the Levi? The Omer Levi, because he has a right to say to the Levi, Anaka Asino, I come Mikach Gavra from the Nochri, the Lomotzis Ishtayu Edina B'day. You couldn't possibly have sued him or forced him to pay off the Maser. Yes, the guy is Mufka from a Kiv Maser. Ula Kamon, but later on in the Gemara, the Gemara says, Dilma kan b'truma gedola, kan b'trumas maaser. The Gemara says there's a distinction here between truma gedola, where the Yisrael, even though he purchased it from a guy, he's chayav to give it to the Kohen, as any truma has to be given. But in the case of the Levi, he's not chayav to give the trumas maaser over to the Kohen. Tiyomer Rabbi Shur ben Levi, minayin lokeh, tfolim b'murach, minanokishu potom b'trumas maaseros. Shenema, I'm sorry, shu potom b'trumas maaser. Shenemar ki tikhu me'es b'nei Yisrael tvolim shatalokeach mi b'nei Yisrael tamafrish me'en trumas maisros trumas maser v'nosno l'koin, but tvolim shatalokeach min anochri iya tamafrish me'en trumas maser v'nosno l'koin. Ad kan.
You don't do your potter from it.
I'm not sure if I understand the difference.
She says, "Ain nice." I mean, there's no chiyuv to give it, it's not the act of the.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to give the trumas maser to a kohen, he's allowed to, but he's not obligated to, and therefore he can demand the kohen pay him for the trumas maser.
No, is it like it's got for maser? If you don't do maser, you can eat it. You mean you're still being over on not giving it to the lady?
Correct. If it's a regular thing, where you bought maser,
are we saying it came from Nachri? There's no chiyuv,
There's a chiyuv afrasha, but there's no chiyuv nesina, and therefore, if the kohen comes along and he says, "Well, give me this trumas maser," what are you going to do with it anyway? He says, "All right. Here's the bill for it. You got to pay me the bill." Okay, so what Reb Chaim has done so far, as it is, he's pointed out that the Rambam is really basing himself on the Gemara straight away. There's nothing that the Rambam adds to the Gemara. Ella, d'lechora, hayenire, logically, says Reb Chaim, if you read the Gemara, you come to the impression that at the end of the day there's a difference between Truma Gedola and Trumas Maaser. Why? Because the Torah says in Trumas Maaser, Ki Tikhu Me'es B'nei Yisrael. And therefore in Trumas Maaser there's no chiyuv to give it to the Kohen. Can sell it to the Kohen, but he doesn't have to give it to the Kohen. The Kohen has no rights to receive Trumas Maaser. That pasuk doesn't appear in Truma Gedola. If Kein Shuv, Lesel Klal, the Taima. The original reason which the Gemara suggested that it's osi mikoach gavra d'lomotzis ishtari yedina b'yedei, that's totally superfluous and unnecessary. So you could say in the Gemara itself that when the Gemara finally presents the drasha of ki tikhu mi'eis b'nei Yisrael and Trumas Maaser, then I don't need to introduce the svara mikoach gavra d'lomotzis yedina b'yedei kasina. And the problem is, therefore, why does the Rambam bring down both reasons? It's true the Gemara has both reasons, but logically, the Gemara's first presentation of Migavra Kasin, etc., is only because the Gemara didn't have the drasha. But once the Gemara has the drasha, why does the Rambam feel compelled to invoke the first reason? Shuv lesa klal the time of the Kasin we call Gavra, etc., etc. I'm skipping the imi shuv time of the Kasin of Migavra. V'chulei hayolo li poter gam benesinas truma gedola. Now Reb Chaim asks another question, that the Gemara must have dropped the original logic, because if the Gemara accepts even maskana the original logic, then in the case of truma gedola, he should be poter based on the original logic. Why? Because what are you telling me? That you come from someone, you know, you purchase from someone vis-a-vis whom the Israel has no monetary rights to demand these fruits, right? So that should apply to Truma Gedola as well. If the Kohen comes to the Israel who purchased from a guy and he says, well, give me the Truma Gedola, the Israel is going to answer him, I know me, call Gavra, etc., Kasina. Obviously, therefore, if the maskanas asugi is to make a distinction between truma gedola and truma maaser, it must be all based on the drushes, because the parasha Beis B'nei Israel only appears in truma gedola, in truma maaser, not in truma gedola. Achena Rambam, maybe a shnei atamim. Why is that so? Question is clear. Says Reb Chaim, we need both explanations. Why can't he use one of the two reasons? And it, again, if the Rambam would only rely on the first reasoning, then we'd have trouble with Truma Gedola, because then Truma Gedola, he would be able to demand payment from the Kohen and sell it to the Kohen. The female the posak Rambam hach the kasina and came shuv kasha amaylo yipotin gamin esinus truma gedola v'tzarchi. So we have two questions here. First of all, why does the Rambam require both reasons? And secondly, if the Rambam does accept la halacha the reason of migavra kasina, then even truma gedola he should be able to sell the truma to the kohen. Vidnire, here's Reb Chaim's breakthrough. The das Rambam he the afal gav the alfina mikra. The chisikhu meyes b'nei Yisrael, the hanikach min anochri les bechiv nesina, that which is purchased by a Jew from a guy, the Yisrael has no rights of monetary rights to demand that, and therefore force the Yisrael into nesina. Only afrosh, right? Amal mikolakom, we still need the p'tur of Ka'asi mikoach nachri hapotr. Dolomotzi l'shtayu yedina midei. Why? Da'akrod chitikhu bolach adish dolo chalalei chiyuv nesino michadash. V'einam chozer mischayim lios b'shus Yisrael. If I only have the reasoning, the logic of, well, I came from the nachri, then now that the Yisrael did the Gemar Malacha, we would therefore recreate a brand new Chiyuv. I no longer have to relate to and base my claim on the original Machayev of Gidol HaTvua be'Eretz Yisrael, right? Karka Shel Eretz Yisrael. I can say, well, forget about that. That's history. And that's irrelevant. Why? Because I have a brand new Chiyuv that can be engendered once the Israel purchases the Trumas and Maasers. I mean the fruits, which are Chayim and Trumas and Maasers. But here, I need the drasha of the Eis B'nei Yisrael. The drasha of Eis B'nei Yisrael is telling us that despite the original p'tur, based on the fact that the fruits grew in the hands of the guy, I would still want to be machadish, a brand new chiddush, based on the Yisrael's possession, his acquisition. But on that I have a pasuk of me'es kitikhu me'es b'nei Yisrael, al-vulfizeh. Chalak adin b'truma gdola midin trumas ma'aser u'midin ma'aser sheni. I mean ma'aser rishon. The b'truma gdola afal gav de potur b'yosu b'shus nachri v'kolakom chozer m'schayev b'yosu b'shus Yisrael. So the b'shus Yisrael is a brand new m'chayev in the case of truma gdola. And what are you going to tell me? Well, there's a p'tur of Mi'eis B'nei Yisrael, but there is no p'tur of Mi'eis B'nei Yisrael in Truma Gedol. Mashenki Me'maiser U'Betrumas Maser Lochale Alei Chiyuv Nesina B'Yosef B'Rishus Yisrael. I mean, the Rishus Yisrael cannot be a new Mechayev B'Shum D'Alfina Mikra D'Chitikhu Mi'eis B'nei Yisrael D'Dafka T'Folam Aboyim Mi'B'nei Yisrael V'Lo T'Folam Aboyim Mi'Rishus Nachri. That when it's T'Folam that come Mi'Rishus Nachri is there's no Chobos Nesina. Why we need both reasonings? The ikar dina, the real din of why there should be a p'tur, is based on the fact that the svara that ka'asina mikach nachri shu pata. Why do I need the gzeres hakasuv and the alfusov me'es b'nei Yisrael? Because I want to be machadish a brand new chiyuv based. An obligation that's generated by the Rishus Yisrael with the Gemara Malach of the Yisrael, and for that I need a pasuk, and that pasuk teaches me that there's no recreation of the chiyuv. But in the case of Truma Gedola, there is a recreation of the chiyuv because there is no gzeiros hakos, there's no miut of Mi'eis B'nei Yisrael. Is lachem, therefore shapir cholak din Truma Gedola mi Trumas Maser. Le'inyan chovas nesina mechadash. That in the case of Truma Gedola, it could be a brand new chiyuv, and that's based on the fact that now it's Rishus Yisrael. In the case of Truma's Maser, there is no brand new chiyuv chadash of nesina because we derive from the pasuk Yitikhu. And now Reb Chaim goes on to explain why it's important to have the original svara of mikoach gavra deloasi ledina. Kasina. That's the next paragraph.
He's saying there's a different quality of tevel based on this meruach about the gemara malach of the Jew, because it only brings a real obligation of truma gedola, but not truma smaser.
Correct. And the only reason why I can't bring a new obligation to truma smaser is because of this pasuk made today.
So this pasuk, it's not some shepherd, it just means doesn't kick in, or
that we don't recreate a brand new chiv nesina. V'hinei v'ikar adover de nachri atzmo la bar nesina the truma smaser who im mishum de nachri less of the mitzvahs. Maybe it's a general halacha that a nochri is not included in mitzvah, so therefore there's no chiv nesina in the case of a nochri. Oh, the name of David din mesuyam bedine nesina. The bishal nochri paka chovas nesina the truma samaisa. It's not because the nochri is part of the mitzvah. No, it's a new din that he doesn't have a chiyuv nesina of trumas ha-maisers. So it's not a reflection of the universal halach that a guy is potter min ha-mitzvahs. V'nira d'nafka mina l'inyin Yisrael haba mikocho. A Yisrael purchases from a guy. Did he name it to call up Torah shel nachri rak mishum d'lav bar mitzvahs? If it's a general halach, he's not chayav mitzvahs again. B'meila kol p'turah shaykh rak l'gabi nachri atzmo. Why should we say that the Yisrael is ba mikach ha-nachri, and therefore he, the Yisrael, should be part? The Nachri is part because he doesn't have any mitzvahs, but the Yisrael is chayiv in mitzvahs. Ha-Yisrael shapir is chayiv b'zeh. Lo shaykh lomar t'ka'asi mikach p'tur. Masha Enkin, I'm skipping a few lines. Im neima d'bit Nachri ika din p'tur. There's a brand new din p'tur as far as the scene of the Kohen. So that's called a hafka, meaning that's a brand new din that says that these peros, insofar as the fact that they grew in the possession of the guy, are excluded from the chiyuv nesina. Came a mela shaykh liftar yidei zeh kama yisrael shabam mikocho midin to kaasi mikoch p'tur. Okay. He goes on and on. You know what? I think just because of the time element, and we do have a lot to accomplish today, I think we'll stop here. As far as this piece.
Sounds a bit of a Gavra Chetzer question here. The good is that Mrs. Gavra on it. What the Waltzmas is in the Chetzer of the
absolutely
produce?
And now it's, if it's Afkar, then it's Chal in the Chetzer, and therefore it should be passed on to the Israel as well. Okay. So let me just put this back, and then. Okay. Now, there's another Reb Chaim here in Hilchas Tumas Ochlin. And as I was reviewing this, I realized that Reb Chaim wants to explain the Yesod HaPlugta between the Rambam and the Raivad based on Din Kloli and Din Mesuyam. Now, let me try to explain. In Zroim and in Tumas Ochlin, there's a halacha of Mechubra Lakarka. And that which is Mechubra Lakarka has certain dinim, as far as Zeroyim is concerned, that which is not considered Mechubra Lakarka has a different din. And also in Tumas Ochlin, that which comes from the Karka has a din of Tumas Ochlin. Now, what happens in the following scenario? That's what this Machlokas, the Rambam and the Raivad, is about. You have fruits that grew on a tree, and they're still attached to the tree. You haven't yet harvested the fruits. However, the tree completely dried up. It's called Yavesh Ha'ilan. And there's halacha in Tumas Ochlin that these peros are considered tlushim. What does that mean, tlushim? Mechubra Lakarka is not susceptible to tuma. Once you harvest the fruits, then the makabel tuma, again with all sorts of conditions, you need a hechsher and so forth and so on. But now, since Yavesh HaIlan, in other words, insofar as the Ilan is the, what word can I use, the conduit, the middleman between the peros and the karka, in other words, because the Ilan is growing from the karka and the peros are still attached to the ilan, that gives the peros the din of mechubra lakarka. Once the yavesh ha'ilan, ha peros harem kitlushim, there's nothing more that connects these peros back to the ground. You could say it in agricultural terms, the peros are no longer nourishing from the ground because the ilan itself is yavesh. So the Raivad points out that he believes that peros remain mechubar even after Yavesh HaIlan. So Reb Chaim says, what is the Raivad talking about? We know from Tosefta's and so forth that Yavesh HaIlan is the peros al kitlushim. V'nirat Raivad lo hisig al te'enim, that's just an example of a fruit, sheyavshu. The Raivad Sovel Chalik that Yavesh HaIlan liYavshu HaPeros. In Yavshu Bo HaPeros, that's one din, and Yashvu HaIlan is Yavesh HaIlan is another din. The Yavshu HaPeros is Mekablin Tuma. The Raivad agrees that if the Peros themselves become dried up and they're no longer nourishing from the ground, now they have a din of tlushim. They're no longer called mechubarim. But what about the reverse case? K'sheyavesh ha'ilan, v'aperos lo yavshu. Then the Raivad holds ha'rehem k'mechubarim, v'enom mekablim tuma. So the machlokas between the Rambam and the Raivad revolves around the case of yavesh ha'ilan. The Raivad understood that all those sources about Yavesh is already considered Tolush, that's referring to the Peros of Yavshu. Whereas the Rambam understood it's a case of Yavesh HaIlan. Okay, what does this have to do with us today? He says the following. Hadi Yavshu HaPeros HaRein Kitlush, the Raivad Shita, that once the Peros are dried up, they're called Tlushu. Halo Shayach Zeh, Rak Lagabe Peros the tumas ochlin. This is not what you'd call a din mesuyam in tumas ochlin, that the peiros now are considered tlushim as far as kavol's tumas ochlin is concerned. Ella hu avidin b'chalat arkula. This is a universal halacha. Le'inyan din mechubar b'chalat arkula. Meaning, wherever the question is whether it's mechubar or not mechubar, the issue of Yavshu becomes the primary issue. So again, what Reb Chaim wants to understand in the Ravid is that we're not talking about a din mesuyam that only applies to Tumas Ochlin, but rather we're talking about a din mechubar, we call it Tarkula, it's a din klali. El Adiyesh Lefarish betray Gavni. He offers the following two definitions. O Dineima, number one, did Peros shiny mishar dvarim. Tisharet varm lo batel chiburam. Uperos mishi yavshu nis batel chiburam. So again, I'm not sure what he means by sharet varm here. Do you have any clue? If anybody could help me with that phrase, sharet varm. Oh, Dineva, let's look at the second side. Digam peros li achar shi yavshu harehen oz kisharet varm chuburim. In other words, we're not dealing with a din klali, which tells me that because of the dryness, it's not mechubar, but rather it's a din mesuyam. The name of the gam peros liachas sheyavshu haren oz kishar dvar mechubarim. As a universal rule, even after yibush, the peros still have the din of mechubarim. El deinyan din mechubar ha'amar betumas ochlim lo moil din mechubar shall call it tarkula. So even though in call it tarkula, since you haven't harvested and detached the fruits, it has a din of mechubar lekarka for all dini haTorah. But in the case of tumas ochlim, we have a din mesuyam. You have to know where we derive it from. He's going to mention that in a minute. That as long as, or once I should say, the peros dry up, it's no longer considered mechubar. So it's not me din mechubar b'kol ha'tarakula, chak me din chibur peros t'ket alfinan v'sifra v'parsha shmini mikra d'zera zarua v'ami din mesuyam shal chibur peros v'alken k'sheyavshu nehida dayin heim kemechubarim. Amol beinyan tumas ochel beinon shuv din chibur, a special din chibur that applies to tumas ochlin, and lesbu, they don't have that din chibur. So he's basically saying that as far as kol ha'tarkul is concerned, you could call this mechubar by virtue of the fact that it is physically mechubar, even though it's not nourishing, but there's a special din which is derived from a pasuk that in tumas ochlin, it's not considered mechubar, even though again it is mechubar, and kol tarkul it's mechubar, because of this din that in tumas ochlin we need a chibur, and we don't have that chibur. V'nira d'arayvitz v'yu the kol zman sheyesh din mechubar shel kol tarkula. Again, even though we would have suggested that there might be a special din in tumas ochlin, that in tumas ochlin now it's considered tolush, and therefore it's makabel tumah, the Ravid holds no. That since in kol tarkula we consider this mechubar, is that dayin eino makabel tumah, even as far as tumas ochlin, they will not be makabel tumah. So the Ravid uses the parameters of kol tarkula and the dinim and the definitions of chibur, those conditions which apply universally, and applies them to tumas ochlin. That's as far as I can tell you from this. Now, Rabosai, what I'd like to do with you is take a look at Yeshiva Shitot of Rav Zev. And I think the last thing that we got up to is page 62. So how many pages do you have? We photocopied 62 and 63?
62 to 63. 60 to 63.
Ah, but you don't have 64. All right, so first let's work on 62 and 63, and then I want to show you something fascinating on 64 and 65. Okay. He says the following. that Rav Chaim, just one second. No, I'm sorry. I think I skipped something. No, I'm sorry. Page 60. You have page 60? Oh, we're not ready for 63.
Page 60,
yes. All right, you have page 60?
Yes.
All right. Good. Okay. So here's the story that he tells. A person came to ask a shaila. It turns out that Reb Chaim was in the middle of Shmoneh Esrei, so he couldn't answer the shaila. And the shaila was the following. He forgot, or let's say circumstances beyond his control, to daven Ma'ariv HaMotzi Shabbos. So that means Sunday morning he's going to be davening a Tfilas Tashlumen to make up for the Ma'ariv that he davened, excuse me, for the Ma'ariv that he omitted on Motzi Shabbos. So the man wanted to know, where should he recite Atachon Antonah? The first tefillah or the second tefillah? So since Reb Chaim was in the middle of davening, he asked one of the other rabbis. And the other rabbi said that he should recite Atachon Antonah in the second Shmoneh Esrei. And Reb Chaim is listening while he's davening Shmoneh Esrei, and he goes, wait a minute. In other words, wait till I finish Shmoneh Esrei. Now, he finishes Shmoneh Esrei and he says the following. He says, you should recite Atachon Antonu in the first Shmoneh Esrei. Harav, the other rabbi, wanted to tell him that it should be in the second Shmoneh Esrei because that Shmoneh Esrei replaces the Motzi Shabbos Shmoneh Esrei, the Ma'ariv, and therefore it receives the Atachon Antonu. So Chaim said the following. Atachon Antonu is not part of Tfilas Motzi Shabbos. It's not part of Ma'ariv of Motzi Shabbos. But rather, it's because it's the first Tfilah after Shabbos. And Reb Chaim said in Mazel Lashon, he said, if on Sunday, on Yom Rishon, I'm sorry, if Yom Rishon would be on Motzei Shabbos, then even though you're davening a tefillah of Yom Rishon, you would recite Atachon Antonu, because it's the first tefillah after Shabbos. Now, obviously, it's impossible to have Yom Rishon on Motzei Shabbos, but he just wanted to show him that this halacha of Atachon Antonu is not related to a specific tefillah that has its own time period, but rather it's engendered by Motzi Shabbos, by the Havdalah between Kodesh and Chol. So the first opportunity that you have to recite Atachon Antonu, that's when you'll be Mavdil ben Kodesh l'Chol with Atachon Antonu. I seem to recall that the Rav said something about Ne'ilah, and I'm trying to remember. It was very similar to this, but I don't remember right now. I'll have to see if I can dig it up.
Will there be enough kina if you actually made Havdalah on Motzei Shabbos, even though they didn't say Atachon Antonu?
I think not, because he's saying that Atachon Antonu and Tefillah is a separate chiyuv, and that chiyuv is to thank Hashem for being Mavdil ben Kodesh l'Chol, your first opportune moment. And as you could really thank Hashem without Tefillah, but Chazal organized it that has to be in the framework of Tefillah. But it's not a din in Ma'ariv. It's a din in the first Tefillah after Shabbos. He tells another story.
If someone took upon himself a 2-day tannus, and somehow he missed mincha and then said aneinu in mincha, would he say aneinu in the next marriage?
Say once more, it's a tannus.
He's taking on a 2-day, for some reason he's taking on a 2-day tannus.
Oh, he has a 2-day tannus.
The cup was a 2-day tannus, and he was, honestly, he didn't say mincha, so he just started saying aneinu. Would he say aneinu? Is it a din in here? Would he say aneinu?
In other words, is aneinu a din in mincha, or is it a din in a tefillas tannus? Now he tells another story. The Gemara in Masechta Kiddushin tells us, Lamaskona, the Gemara has two opinions, that Kibud Av is Mishel Av, meaning I don't have to shell out my own money to be Mechavid my father. If he wants me to bring him something that costs money, he has to foot the bill. That's called Kibud Av Mishel Av. So someone came to Reb Chaim and he said that in order to go from Brisk to Lemberg or whatever it was, I'm just giving names, he would have to take a train. And he doesn't want to pay for the ticket because Kibud Av is Mishalav. So you want to know if he's potter from the mitzvah of Kibud Av. So Reb Chaim said to him two words, Telech Ragli, go by foot. So Reb Zevi makes a big deal about this because he tries to show that sometimes Reb Chaim, with just a few words, he gets to the point. You know, he conveys the message. Reb Chaim is very sharp. Because what he's saying, go by foot, meaning you're not part of the mitzvah Kibbutz. You don't have to pay for the train. But you have a chi of Kibbutz. If it means you have to go by foot, it'll take you a month to get there. That's what you have to do. So Reb Zevin says that he wants to combine this with another story about Reb Chaim. He said that the Gemara tells us in the Masechet Psachim that there's a safek about kikar b'fi nachash. So I'm doing my bedikas chametz and my beer chametz, but I have one kikar that's in the mouth of a serpent. And the Gemara says that in order to remove that kikar, you're going to have to pay somebody that's called a chaver. He's a special, what do they call it in India? Charmer, right? A snake charmer, in order to be able to get the kikar out of its mouth without endangering your life. So you wanted to ask him. So the Gemara vacillates back and forth, and the two tzadim in the sugya on Daf Yudam and Beis is number one, the gufei atrachidu rabbanon. The rabbanon only obligated you to do tirchas aguf, meaning whatever physically you have to do to get rid of your chametz, that's what you have to do. Odil Maloshna, Chazal will machayev you to go at all ends. And if it means paying the bills in order to hire a charmer, that's what you have to do. So the Talmud asks Reb Chaim, L'chor, this is against the Gemara back at the beginning of the Perek. The Gemara says that with regard to the sugya of maskir and socher, and who has to do the bedika, the Gemara says, Yesh makomo shenogim liskar, that you pay someone to check your house for chametz. And that was apparently a minna. So the Talmud asks, well, wait a minute, there's a tzad in the Gemara says that, tachachinu begufayu, v'lo mimo anayu, I don't have to shell out for, you know, the charmer. And therefore, in the case where I don't want to do the bedika myself, why do I have to pay someone and hire someone? Why not say b'mamono lo etrechu? Just like the Gemara says in the case of nachash, b'fi nachash b'mamono lo etrechu. So Reb Chaim wanted to give an answer to this question without answering the question, meaning forcing the Talmud to figure it out on his own. So he told the whole story about Kibud Av Va'em. Are you with me on both sides? Reb Chaim had a pedagogic approach. He wanted to evoke the response and get the student to understand and answer his own question instead of just feeding him the answer. So in order to answer this question, he told him over the story about Kibud Av. So what's the divyan here? In the case of Kibud Av, he can be Mechaved his Av, but he has two ways of doing it. So he goes by foot, or he takes a train, and then he has the right to say, well, I don't want to pay for the train. But since he has the opportunity to be Mechaved in the mitzvah by going by foot, then he's Chaved in the mitzvah. Now it's his decision whether he wants to pay for the cab. But in the case of Kikar b'fi nachash, there he doesn't have the possibility of getting the thing out. He'll kill himself. He'll end up in the, it's a suicide case if he gets it out. So the only way he can fulfill the mitzvah is by shelling out and paying someone. He has no other opportunity, no other method of fulfilling mitzvah. The Gemara says, "B'mamono lo etrechu." In the case of Daf Beis, this guy says to himself, I have two ways of fulfilling the mitzvah of bir chametz, of bedikas chametz. Either I do it myself and I kill 5 hours. In those 5 hours, I could have accomplished X, Y, and Z. Instead, let me pay somebody. That's his choice to decide when he wants to pay somebody. The same way you keep it up. You have a chiyuv of being mechaber your father. You don't want to show up because it's too exhausting of a trip. It'll eat up too many hours of your time. So you have another opportunity. Pay for a train. The only thing is, in the case of a Pi Nachash, the Gemara thinks there, the Iker Achiv is now on the moment, because there is no possibility of being Machayev on his goof. When is Achiv on the goof? The guy wants to get away with it and say, let me hire somebody else. Okay, you want to save yourself all that time, so shall out. But in the case of Pi Nachash, of Chavitz with Pi Nachash, there is no possibility of doing a begufe, and now we have to mechadish a new chiyuv b'toras moment. And the Gemara vacillates as to whether or not this chiyuv engenders a chiyuv moment. That's what Rav Chaim, I think, wanted the students to understand. He gives another example of where Rav Chaim pedagogically wanted to test the students. Okay? And this is on page 62. And I always forget which page numbers you have. You have 62?
62.
Right. So 62, halfway through this middle paragraph, which Rav Zevin quotes the following story, not just to illustrate Rav Chaim's pedagogy, but also to illustrate that Rav Chaim always wanted to show a person that Mishkal Rishon, that's what he thinks intuitively to be the answer, if he thinks a little bit more, is not the right answer. So Rav Chaim tested his students with the following case. I don't know if I ever discussed this with you. I know I said it here once. He had two esrogin for Sukkos. One came from Eretz Yisrael, one came from Karfu. The one that came from Karfu was absolutely stunning. But it wasn't 100% sure that it was an esrog. It might have been a burka. The one that came from Eretz Yisrael was al panim, as the Israelis say. But it was definitely an esrog.
Zan chaznish.
So which one should he take first? That was Reb Chaim's question. Reb Chaim rotzo lito l'shneihem, because each one has an advantage of the other. One has the advantage that it's mehudar, but you're not sure if it's an esrog. The other, at least you know it's an esrog. Is Ezim Ehem Yitol Rishon. So he expected that the Mishkal Rishon, that the first, you know, intuitive knee-jerk response would be take the Eretz Yisraeli first. Why?
100% kosher.
Because that's 100% kosher. Said Reb Chaim, think about it again. Says, Lozaz Misham. He didn't move until he tested them and they came up with the answer. If he takes the Israeli esrog first, then he was mekayim the Iker mitzvah of netilas lulav of esrog, but he has no heder mitzvah because it's a low grade esrog. But once he's mekayim the mitzvah because it's clearly an esrog, There's no heder mitzvah. You can't be mahadar mitzvah if you're not chayav in the mitzvah. So he was already yotzei his chiyuv by taking the Israeli esrog first. But if he takes the Korfu esrog first, so mimanav shal. If it happens to be he walked out and said esrog, sees mekayim zekei v'aveim because it's a beautiful esrog. And in the worst case scenario, if he wasn't yotzei, he'll take the Israeli esrog second. They're both sitting in front of him.
The other one's a real mitzvah.
Right, you mean to say it's a suffix of Mavir HaMitzvah, I guess. I don't know. But Mavir HaMitzvah, I don't think would apply here because he has the two esrogim right there in front of him. Now, there's a tremendous story that I wanted to tell you about Reb Chaim in Rabbi Bleich's book, which is called Contemporary Halachic Problems, but I realize now we only have the first two volumes. This is volume 5, which I have in Harnof. So, believe me, I want to bring that in. It's an unbelievable story about Reb Chaim. Here Rav Zevin tells the story about a get. This is on the bottom of page 62, but mostly on page 63. What happened? So there was a woman who was in Beis Din, and she didn't want to receive her get. So the husband pulled a shtick. he had to get written, folded up, and placed into an envelope with her name on the outside. Maybe he also faked the stamp. I don't know what he did. And he put the envelope on the table, and he said to her, "Here's a letter from your Alta Baba, whatever it is." And she picks up the envelope, opens it up, and she finds that there's a get inside. So this actually happened in the Beis Din in Brisk. And Reb Chaim was there. Now, we have a principle at Hilchos Gittin, V'nosan b'yodo, Tli Gittin Magabi Karka. If a man puts the get on the table, and she picks up the get, ain't ever gureshes. It's not valid. Because it's got to be v'nosan b'yodo. Right? So all the Dayanim in Brisk at this point agreed per echad unanimously that what?
Get posel.
It's not worth a dime. And so Reb Chaim yelled out, "Is she married to a Kohen?" Now that's a catchphrase for saying suffer get. Right? Because if it's a suffer get, then she can no longer live with him because a grusha can't live with a Kohen. What's the suffix of here? This is mamish a case of tli gittim chal gavi kark. So the dayanim had to rack their brains to figure out what Reb Chaim had in mind of here. So it turns out that Reb Chaim had in mind the sugya bar mitzia called chatzer. The Gemara says that if something falls into my chatzer, I can make a kinyan through my chatzer on that object. That's number one. Number two, the Gemara says in Perikas Zorek, which is the Sugi Gittin, on Dafayin Zayin, that if a man puts a get into his chatzer, and then he's makna the chatzer to the Isha, and the get is in the chatzer, she's Megureshes. So Reb Chaim says that the matafa, the envelope, is a chatzer. And since he was machna ha the chatzer, the moment that the chatzer becomes hers and there's a get in the chatzer, there's a get in her chatzer, that's exactly like the case of the Gemara that says that if he puts the get down in his chatzer, then he's machna ha the chatzer, she's begureshes. So the Dayanim was so impressed, they said to Reb Chaim, "So why do you call it a suffix get? Then it should be a vada get."
If it's machna, they're putting it into the Teres Kinyan. There's a makachtos involved because he said it was from a baba.
It doesn't matter. I think in haknas get, since isha is gereshes bal karcha, then it's irrelevant whether or not she has das kinyan.
The matafa we're saying is a kinyan chotzer. The get came after that. I think in the kinyan of the chotzer.
Right. So maybe there was a letter and a get inside. I don't. This part I don't know. See, here what's going on now. Now the Dayanim turn over and they say to Reb Chaim, they follow Karim and they say, "Reb Chaim, so why is the suffix here? If you're telling me that he's makna on the chatzer and there's a get in the chatzer, and the Gemara says explicitly that's Megureshet, quoted in Shulchan Aruch Eben Ezra, so this should be a case where she's Megureshet. Why did you say suffix?" Oh. So Reb Chaim quoted a third sugya. There's a sugya called Kalev Shal Makna. Or Kalev Shal Kot. Let me just read to you the Gemara.
Three quarters down in the first paragraph. Yeah.
Okay.
Is it where you have notes in the margin?
Maybe.
Next to that.
Oh. Kalev shall mocher b'shus lokeach is another sugya. Also in the Bavas, here it's in Bav Basra, he says, is kana lokeach o lo. Nachum, let me just go over it one time. Kalev shall mocher b'shus lokeach. So I want to give you something. And I want to sell you something. And that something is in a chatzer. It's in a kli. But the kli is in the lokeach's reshus. Again, what's the problem here? That since the kli is in the rishus that every kinyan requires taking the object into the rishus of the kohen. But here, the chutz itself is b'rishus lokeach, right? I'm sorry, I'm a little rusty on this sugya here. Kalev shel mocher, since the mocher owns the kalim, and therefore, that's it. The question is, you have one object inside another object that's inside a rishus. This reminds me of the sugya at the beginning of Shabbos about
the candle floating in the water.
It's in a boat on the water. So what happened here? He has an object that he wants to be machmir to lokeach. The object is now in the rishus of lokeach, but the problem is it's in the chutz of the mocher. So the chutz of the mocher is in the rishus of lokeach. What's the chutz? In this case, the kli. So he's got an object inside a kli, right? So that's a problem, because this kli belongs to the mocher. On the other hand, where is the kli sitting? It's in the rishus lokeach. So the question now is, does lokeach, through his chatzer, have a kinyan on the object that's sitting in the kli of the mocher?
Without being kohen in the kli.
So that's two deis in the Gemara Bava Basra. According to the deis that says lo kana, what it means is that the only way she can be kohen in the get inside the matafa is if he's machna her the matafa. Nimtza she'ilu lo haya machna lo asa matafa lo haisa kohen as a get, because b'shus. It's because since it's in the kelim shel mocher, she can't. There's no way she can be kohen to get that's inside the kli unless he's marked on the kli. Al yidei haknas hamatafa, he's zocha baget. Vareze dome nosan get b'chatzero v'hiknolas chatzero. Aval im kelim shel mocher b'shus lokeach kohen lokeach, which means that she doesn't have to acquire ownership on the matafa, because the get is in our hand, even though it's inside the matafa, because now we're holding like the man who says birshus lokeach kana lokeach. Is there fafilu in lo machnal as a matafa? He's zocha beget. Is there faknas a matafa? Lo poel as ala get klal. In other words, what the sugya says, that if he puts the get in his chotzer and he's machnal the chotzer, it means that the haknas hachotzer is his nesina. Why? Because there's no way that she can acquire the get, which is sitting in his chotzer, unless he's machna on that chotzer. So haknas hachotzer is considered giving her the get. But here, if she has the get without his being machna on the matofa, then it's tligite v'alvi karka. V'shuv ha'chisor shel nesina saget. V'kevet shadover sofek b'din. The Gemara comes to no conclusion in that Ibailahu, to the Ibail Loivsham, Kalev Shal Mocher, Shusokeh Kona, Lochain Poskarama, Posak Rav Chaim, she's selfing the Gurash.
I've got two big problems with this one. Matofa. Well, first of all, doesn't a Chotzer have a minimum shear? I think we have
it, it has to have a shame. Kli.
In Shabbos, we talk about Yad Adam. There's a shadow where the Yad has got enough, is large enough to be. Right. I mean, they get to his body.
When the Yad is large enough to be a Mokum Al Nocha, no? Is that what you mean?
That's certainly the beginning of Shabbos. And the other thing that occurs to me is...
But again, Daniel, a case of the status of a kli is not dependent upon its size. A kli is a kli. It can be as small as anything, as long as it's a receptacle. So if you have a matafa and it has a get inside of it, it's a kli. And a kli is a chotzer.
The other part I was thinking is the matafa of an important document like it. Get to where it is, the matafa is usually tafel to the document inside.
Right, so therefore, what is it? Din of bitl?
Yeah, bitl. Okay.
I don't know, maybe. How are we doing on the clock? Okay, we'll just finish it up with one more point here. You have page 64?
No. 60 to 63.
All right, so on the top of 64, he tells a very cute story. With that, we'll wrap it up. He says that there was an issue about a get, and the Dayanim and Brisk were divided into two groups, whether the get is kosher or not. So what they used to do in those cases, since get is such a severe question, they would send it to the Gadol Hador. And the Gadol Hador was Rav Yitzchak Elchanan's specter. So Rav Chaim wrote a summary of both opinions, you know, in all their svaras, sent it to Rav Yitzchak Elchanan with a special bakasha that he added with a telegraph. In those days they sent telegraphs. And the telegraph message was, he's asking Rabbi Chanan to please paskin on the get, whether it's kosher or posel, without giving any explanations. So everybody assumed that he relied on Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. He didn't want to bother Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan to give all his explanations. But the Yodei Dover knew why he told the Rabbi Chanan not to give him explanations, because any explanation he would give, he would slark it up. He would disagree with it. And then he wouldn't be able to be matzah again. And Rabbi Zeman goes on to say that people think that the reason why Rabbi Chaim avoided psak halacha, he was not known as a posek, he used to send all the shilas to Rabbi Rieger, who was the dayan at Brisk, is because he was afraid, you know, what we call yiras, yiras ha-psak, yiras ha-ra. You know, people are afraid to basket. It's such a response. He says, that's not it. Rav Chaim knew exactly how he wanted to basket, but he knew he was always against what everybody else said. So he didn't want to undermine, with his logic that would be so compelling, all the Piskei Dinim that came before him. And that's why he told Rav Chanan, just give me the answer. That's a moral line, you're the Gadol Hador. Because if you're going to give me svaras, that's what he really meant to tell him, I'm gonna slug up your svaras. Alright, we'll stop here. Okay. So there's just a few more pages to this essay, which maybe we'll be able to finish up next time. Make a note where we got up to.